Okay, so it's Arya Kaplan's Immortality, Resurrection, Age of the Universe, page 115, the first chapter of Genesis. Who wants to read? Shall I read?
Yeah, you read. Very well.
Thanks. Can you believe, my brothers, that this wonderful secret was clearly recorded in the first parsha of our Holy Torah, in which is contained all knowledge and which is the source of all life? Observe well that between the folds of the beginning of the Torah, where it states, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, if the heavens are one element, that is to say, the fine gas called ether, as our sages, may their memory be blessed, state, the word Shamayim is an acronym for Esh and Mayim, fire and water. This teaches that the Holy One, blessed be He, took fire and water and mixed them together. Truly, the upper air is made up of warm vapor, but the Rakia, the firmament, and who knows what that word means in English, firmament, the same thing as phylacteries in English, doesn't mean anything really. Rakia is made up of the lower air, called atmosphere, made for breath, and which extends 7 or 8 parasangs from the earth. At any rate, the fact that the Torah mentions the command of the Holy One, blessed be He, let there be an expanse, Rakia, but does not record a similar command for the creation of the heavens, is difficult. And if you wish to suggest that the Rakia was created out of nothing, and so there would have been nothing to which the command could have been issued, we must still inquire as to why the creation of the four elements of earth, air, fire, and water is not mentioned. Moreover, the second verse of Genesis, the earth was empty and desolate, is altogether superfluous. For who does not know that before the Holy One, blessed be He, fashioned all the creations of this world, light did not yet exist either? And is it therefore obvious that all was emptiness? And it is therefore obvious that all was emptiness and desolation and darkness. So he's saying there's lots of secrets in these lines, right? Because you have the obvious and the mysterious mixed together. Again, it is written that the Spirit of God hovered upon the face of the waters. And yet this verse has no clear meaning at all. Rashi explains that it refers to the glory throne of God hovering above the waters, a remark which itself requires explanation. However, it would seem that here our Holy Torah has revealed to us a little of the wonderful secret which we mentioned above, that this world is not in its first cycle, but that the four elements were actually created in the earlier cycles, and therefore are not mentioned in the account of the creation of the current cycle. That is why the Torah informs us at the beginning, that is, at the beginning of all beginnings, God created the heavens, that is, the ether, which fills all three-dimensional space, halal, ha'olam, hanir'eh, the earth, that is, the globe of the earth. And after that, the Torah skips over the happenings which took place at that primeval world, which do not concern us at all in our current existence. That's interesting. So it's just important to remember that the Torah is not a book of science. Not science. It's not meant to tell you the recipe for the creation of the world. And clearly it doesn't. Rather, although he is looking at it a little bit scientifically, saying if it doesn't say, so then it must be it was created at a different time.
Well, he's a physicist, right?
Arya Kaplan is a physicist, not the author of this article.
This article
was included in the book Arya Kaplan included, but this is by a rabbi written in the 1800s.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Which is why it's so interesting to see his science, this rabbi's science, which is old already, talking about the ether. And I don't know what we hold on ether today. We still have a conceptual concept of the ether. But I don't know scientifically where we're holding on ether as an idea.
Ether is used in medicine, isn't it?
But it doesn't mean that kind of medicine. There's that kind of medicine.
Definitely some kind of a mixture of gases that he's talking about.
He's talking about a mixture of gases, not talking about the specific ether that puts you to sleep.
Right.
Not talking about that. He's talking about the ether, the stuff of the universe. So at that time was called the ether. I think even in Einstein's time it was. I listened to a biography of Einstein once on a trip driving somewhere, trying to remember what it was about. Today we use the word ether to mean I guess, the general stuff of life. Like, mm-hmm. like you might say that open source software is releasing code into the ether. Mm-hmm. You could say that today. Mm-hmm. That then anybody has access to mm-hmm. it because you've released it into the ether. And mm-hmm. then people can catch it mm-hmm. if they want to and do something mm-hmm. with it. But that's sending it out there.
There is a Russian word for it. Like, for example, when radio transmits programs, that's
sends
the word.
It into the ether.
Yes.
Right. So there mm-hmm. is. So mm-hmm. I think there's a scientific concept of ether, mm-hmm. which is different than the
right.
Mm-hmm. current.
There's many meanings.
Yeah. So I'm not mm-hmm. sure exactly what he's referring to here, if he's mm-hmm. actually referring to what they currently thought of in science as ether, and they use that to talk about the, mm-hmm. in a way, like the protoplasm of the universe, like the stuff in between the stuff. But that's what ether means, is the stuff in between the stuff, in a way. The ether. Anyway, back up to here. I think we're at the third paragraph, right? That's why the Torah informs us. Rather, the Torah tells us that the earth was empty and desolate, etc. That is, that emptiness and desolation were created anew. As it is stated in the Targum of Jonathan ben Uziel, the earth was empty and desolate of any humans. The intent of the verse is not that it was made totally desolate and empty of existence entirely, but rather that through the supernal will, may he be blessed, the earth received a blow as from a stormy wind accomplishing his word, and the primeval order of creation became a confused mixture of fire and water, and darkness came into existence above the deep. That's interesting. So he is saying this refers to just previous creations, the world. There were humans before. They were wiped out, so that's why they had to say the earth was desolate, because obviously it would be if it hadn't been created yet. But this is a new creation of desolation, a wiping out, and now a new desolation. Again, the verse states, the Spirit of God hovered upon the surface of the water. This refers to the Spirit which gives life to all living things, which is mentioned in Ezekiel 37. As Scripture states, come from the four winds, O Spirit, and blow into these slain. It is this same Spirit which is mentioned in this connection after the flood has passed. As Scripture states, the Lord caused a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters subsided. It is this Spirit which is mentioned in connection with the creation of Adam. As it is stated, he breathed into his nostrils the Spirit of life. This is the Spirit which is mentioned here too, vis-a-vis that the Spirit of life began to hover and weave itself on the surface of the waters, which covered the earth. This is what our sages, may their memory be blessed, meant by the glory throne, the Spirit which gives life to all living things. That's interesting. It is that which is called the glory throne, for through it one sees the glory of the King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He, who is the animating force of nature, for nature is his heavenly throne, may he be blessed, which began to hover over the surface of the waters as a dove hovers over her nest to bring out its chicks. The Torah now begins to recount the order of the current cycle of creation, in which each day was a preparation for the next, as explained above, as each primitive earthly cycle was a preparation for the next cycle which followed it. So too, in each cycle, the work of each day was a preparation for the day following. The explanation of these matters is lengthy, and we must now become concise without digressing from our main subject. Nevertheless, my dear brothers, observe the greatness and wondrous loftiness of the Torah. Note the large letter Bet with which the Torah opens, and scrutinize the four crowns on that Bet. The Kabbalists have a tradition that these four crowns hint that the creation of the world and all its hosts, as described therein, is the fourth in order, and that the letter Bet, which is a gematria equivalent to the number 2, informs us that the crown and glory of creation, the human intellect, is here for the second time. Interesting. Early man. In my humble opinion, those humans who lived in the primordial world known as pre-Adamites in the vernacular, that is, the humans who lived in the world before the creation of Adam in the current cycle of creation, are identical to the 974 generations mentioned in Shabbat 88b and Chagiga 14a, who were fashioned before the current cycle of creation. That's interesting. We should look that up. Those two Gemaras. Huh. Make the following calculation. According to the words of our sages, may their memory be blessed. This is derived from the verse, He commanded a word for 1,000 generations, that the Torah was fit to be given at the end of 1,000 of these early generations, that is to say, at the beginning of the current cycle of creation, which is created with greater perfection in intellect and character traits than the previous one. Now, in my humble opinion, each generation of which our sages spoke consisted of a period of 7 years, since every 7 years the world changes, as we noted above. Thus, the 7,000 years of the previous cycle's existence are the 1,000 generations which our sages, may their memory be blessed, mentioned. They thus have informed us that after the generations of the earlier cycle were banished from the world like thorns in the vineyard of the God of hosts, and the world was recreated in a more perfect fashion, it was fitting that the Torah be given to the Adam of this cycle, for the world had matured to that point. However, since the previous world had behaved egregiously, it was relegated to a fold in time of no consequence and died when 26 of the 1,000 generations were yet to come. That is, at the end of the 974 generations, which our sages, may their memory be blessed, mentioned, as noted above, according to the equation of 7 years per generation, the destruction of that world occurred in the year 6818 from the beginning of creation.
Huh? Of that creation.
Of that creation. The 26, why, and why 7 years per generation? Because of the Shemitah cycles. The 26 generations which were lacking in the previous cycle were completed during the period between Adam and our teacher Moses. The 10 generations from Adam to Noah, the 10 from Noah to Abraham, 6 generations from Abraham to our teacher Moses, when the world matured and was purified to the point of being fit for the giving of the Torah. That's interesting. So that's the second human creation. That is what the verse says, from world to world you are God. And likewise, blessed is God, Lord of Israel, from world to world. Or those are probably Tehillim, right? Sources here. Yeah. Psalms and Chronicles. For the Holy One, blessed be He, in His great mercy, in order that no one should be banished forever, arranges matters so that all the holy sparks which have been given off by His Godhead, may He be blessed, in the primordial world, should, by means of their free will, perfect themselves. However, since the inhabitants of the earth of the earlier cycle acted egregiously and formed 974 corrupt generations which were banished from the world, He, in His great mercy, brings them back to this current most perfect cycle of creation, so that it will be easier for them to perfect themselves than before, according to His will, may He be blessed. So that's interesting. So here He's talking about reincarnation, not just within this world, but between worlds.
I'm just thinking.
It's hard to absorb.
That previous creation existed for thousands and thousands of years. Is it possible that God never revealed Himself to those people?
Or didn't give them the Torah, certainly.
He didn't.
Right, He didn't give them the Torah. So what revelation? Yeah, it's a good question. What revelation was there? Or hope for connection? Huh. This is what the verse mentioned above implies. From world to world, you are God. Your providence and mercy as a father for His children will accompany us from world to world, constantly directing us in paths of justice. And so too it is written, for this is God our Lord. He directs us forever, forever after on worlds. That is, as a father who wishes to accustom his young son to walk alone, and so stands him up in front of him at a short distance, the time of one cycle of creation, and circles him with his arms so that if he starts to fall, he will fall into his arms, and the Father will then straighten him up at this short distance as before. So you will direct us again from world to world and perfect us in each one of them, again, less and less than at first, so that in the end we will draw near to you. That's interesting. So he had like practice worlds, kind of. Wow.
It's,
yeah.
It's just, you know, it's incredible.
Yeah.
You know, very fascinating. Just, you know, who knows, true right. or not true, but,
right,
you know,
right.
just even...
This is a theory, yeah, that's not
just
yet.
To,
well, he's basing it on something.
Right.
But, yeah, he is.
But, or something.
But just to imagine that...
Right. I'm sure, you know, not everybody agrees with this. It's not, like, definitely accepted mainstream 100%, but it is a legitimate Jewish theory within the...
Well, it makes sense
theories,
that
yeah.
there was something, right?
Right.
Yeah, you go see the Mammoth and right. Mastodon's exhibition, right. and you think, like, you
right.
know, who were those people who hunted them?
Right, right. Fascinating. Now, my brothers, okay, our future intellectual attainments. Now, my brothers, windows to the greater light have opened for us regarding this principle of faith that we have already been here, all of us in the primordial world from which we disappeared. We may be assured by several proofs that we have come again to this world in the garb of a new body, more perfect than before. And again, there will come a time after we have completed our assigned tasks in this world and disappear from all eyes with our deaths, that the world will again be recreated after the present cycle, that we will return again to be seen in the world yet more perfect than now. As it is written, they will sprout up in towns like the grass of the land. And so too it states, the path of the righteous is like radiant light, which encircles the world again and again, shines more brightly until the day is established. At the end of the seventh cycle, the great jubilee, when all the holy sparks will return to the first cause, may he be blessed, in great perfection. This is the purpose of all creation, and this is why the verse says, until the day is established, for that is the great and terrible day which the last of the prophets mentioned at the end of his prophecy. So wait a second. So we're just in one cycle, and there's supposed to be another cycle after this. That's what it's saying, right? And
the cycle after the cycle we're in right now.
Right. Yeah. I'm not happy about that. I'm ready for us to bring the world to perfection. I'm impatient. Let's go.
At the end of the seventh end.
Where do you get that it would be the that there would be another creation after this one?
Well, after this one, it's very clear because you just said, right?
At the end of the seventh cycle, which is what we are in now,
yeah,
right? We're at the end of the...
We're in the seventh cycle.
Right? The Great Jubilee.
Who says we're in
the seventh cycle?
No,
we're
no.
in the sixth cycle.
Yeah.
Sixth cycle.
No.
Well, it's 6,000 years, but it's
the
seventh cycle.
We're in the sixth.
We're
in the sixth cycle.
We're in the sixth. We're in the last.
Because you have the first cycle is 0, 1, 2, 3.
Well, we're in the last millennium of the last cycle.
So this would be the sixth cycle.
Well, if you call
Mashiach
this a cycle.
Is supposed to come
a cycle is 7,000 years, right? So it's like 6,000 years of this world, and then a 1,000 years of desolation.
Okay, so and now then, so we're in the end of six, but who says what cycle this is? We're just towards the end of the cycle.
I thought that it was in the beginning of the book that we were talking about.
He said, I think we're in the fourth cycle.
Well, he wrote this, though, in the 1800s.
No. In the beginning of the book by Kaplan.
He says?
The,
I think we should just continue. There's so much interesting stuff. Okay. Anyway, he's definitely said that we were lower, and we've been reincarnated right now in a more perfected body, and we're going to die again, and we'll be reincarnated in a more sublime body. That's what he's saying so far here. And in the end, we're all supposed to be united back into Hashem's oneness. But let's look at the second paragraph here. If now, in this world, our intellects have not sufficiently matured for us to understand the secrets of the Torah's laws properly, and from several points of view, we can only speculate in dark hypotheses that we have already been here. In the future world, however, this belief, which is our refuge, will then be clear to us with great clarity. This is especially so in light of the fact that we see in the current cycle with greater intellectual perfection than in the previous world, that each person knows and feels what is fitting for him to do in regard to his obligations to his fellow and understands well his natural obligations. In time to come in the future world, his eyes will be as bright as the two lights of creation, and with them will all the secrets of the earth be revealed, and all the laws of the Torah in regard to obligations and prohibitions, what he must correct and what he has corrupted in himself by means of all these. This secret is promised him, in that coming world we will be able to remind ourselves that we have already been here in a previous life, and what we have done, etc. This is the true significance of the belief in the resurrection of the dead. In my humble opinion, this is the purport of the Kaddish we recite after the burial, after we have hidden away the body in the secret bowels of earth, in order that those who see all this will not despair of the resurrection of the body to life, and so to strengthen the hearts of Israel which believe in the resurrection of the dead. This is why the mourners rise to recite aloud, "May his great name be magnified and sanctified." That's interesting. That's behind their tradition to stand for Kaddish instead of sit.
No, you stand for Kaddish.
I'm saying that's what he's saying here. Not everybody does. It's not halacha. You don't have to stand for Kaddish. No, you're not allowed to sit during Kaddish if you're standing. But you don't have to stand if you're sitting for Kaddish. We do. That's our custom. Oh. But it's not.
So if you're sitting, you can remain sitting.
Yes,
if
you
standing,
can. Then you have to stay standing. If you're standing, you have to stay standing.
How come everyone gets up there?
But because they want to show the respect for it.
Mourners stand up, but not non-mourners don't have to stand up.
For mourners, Kaddish, right? No, but right, you're right. But in our congregation, everybody rises for Kaddish.
For rabbis, Kaddish,
all of the Kaddishes, we all stand for all the Kaddishes. Mm-hmm. But you should know that's not the halacha. You do not have to stand for Kaddish. Mm-hmm. But what it's saying here is behind that custom. This is why the mourners rise to recite aloud, "May his great name be magnified and sanctified," because you're talking about the resurrection, the rising of the dead, the standing up from lying down. So you stand.
Oh, I didn't understand the connection
in order
here.
To represent
okay.
The resurrection.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Isn't that interesting?
Mm.
Behold, these two words, great and holy, are antonyms. Great and holy are antonyms? For great refers to a matter which spreads and widens until even those who are dim of sight can see it. But the word holy, contrary-wise, refers to a matter which is set apart and hidden from all eyes. That's interesting.
Someone's phone's on.
Yeah.
Is that yours?
Yeah. Or, yeah. However, according to the religion of our holy Torah and our precious faith, we must believe that the Holy One, blessed be He, has two characteristics. One, He is high and exalted, holy and supernal, beyond the perception of any creation. Oh, please. I'll just check and see. Two, who are you? But that's my husband calling. I won't answer because he's desperate. Hello? Hi, we're just still learning until 11. No, I'm not paying extra. No. Now. Okay, I'll talk to you in half an hour. Do you really think the flights might be canceled tomorrow? Oh, gosh. Well, buy it, because I can always not... You can cancel it within 24 hours. Or can you? I have to buy a whole new ticket? Is that it? That's a different airline. Uh-huh. Okay, so buy it, and we can always cancel it. Yeah, you can cancel within 24 hours. But on United. Sign. Yeah, but I don't have it right now. Like, oh, gosh. I can put that in later. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because I don't have... Oh, I do have it. Let me just stop this recording.